Welcome back. This is the Age of the Podcast, episode number 21. I'm here with Mikhail Bohanis today. Hey, Mikhail, how are you doing?
I'm very well, very well. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for taking the time for being here, coming on. So, Mikhail, I know you from before, and I know what you do, but I'm sure our listeners might not have heard of you before. Why don't you just briefly take me through what you're doing, and what you're working on right now?
Sure. So, although it's hard to imagine that your listeners haven't heard about me before.
You're quite the name.
Exactly. Huge. So my name is Mikhail Bohanis. I usually go by Michael, but you can go with whatever you prefer. I run a content marketing agency called Content 360, content with a K. And what we do is we help small and mid-sized B2B companies to get started and to improve their content marketing. So we usually work with companies who don't have a huge amount of background with content marketing. And very often it's companies who we speak to and they say, we just don't know where to start. We have a blog, we have put out the occasional video or something like that, but there's not real continuity in it. There's not a plan and a strategy in it, and we're not seeing a lot of results in it. So we work with them and improve whatever they have or get them started completely from scratch. Because although content marketing has been around for almost 20 years now, and I mean the concept itself is really old. There's a famous example of content marketing from the early, even late 19th century, where there was John Deere, which is a company for farming equipment,
yeah.
And they started publishing a magazine in the 19th century, and it was called The Furrow. And that was essentially the first example of content marketing, where a company was putting out a piece of content on a regular basis, a magazine, which did not really advertise their products, but was informative for their audience, right? So the concept is old, of course, but systematically content marketing has been done for, let's say, some 20 years. And yep. Still many companies are, you know, understandably, because it's a relatively complicated concept to get all the individual aspects of it right. And so we are helping them to get started. That's essentially what we do. And I've been doing this for almost 3 years now.
Oh, really? And just to get this right, so content marketing, in principle, it seems to be a mixture of value addition without being too pushy, and also sort of a storytelling thing where you can shape a narrative around a company or a cause, right?
Yes, absolutely. So it is the... 90% of your content marketing, maybe even more, should really be about adding value to the user. And there you have to really think like a journalist, like starting to think like a media company. So let's say you are, for example, a recent example of a company we work with is a recruitment agency. So you, of course, know if you're a recruitment agency, you know your stuff about what customers want, what they're looking for, and how you can satisfy that. But on the other hand, you now also need to think about what content will my audience, the decision makers, in this company's case, it's, you know, HR directors and in-house recruiters, what are they searching for? What kind of topics are they interested in? What unifies them? And then you publish content that serves that audience. So for example, in this company's case, it's all because they're specializing in admin staff, so PAs and HR support and so on. So there's very much about the topic of fit, you know, personality fit. It's a really big issue for many companies where the qualifications of PAs are relatively easily achieved they're like pretty standardized generally.
But you don't need a PhD, let's just say it like that.
Sorry?
You don't need a PhD, let's just
Exactly. I mean, also the experience matters, of course, but far often the failure and when people let somebody go, let a PA go, they let them go because it's not a personality fit, because they just simply don't vibe with the chemistry of the company. So this company is now going to, and this is what we kind of suggested to them in their content marketing strategy, they should really be going after this particular topic, personality fit. How can you, when you're interviewing somebody, how can you match their personality to your company. And they're kind of going to be breaking this down in videos. They're going to be interviewing people. They will be writing blog posts about this and so on. So this is going to be one of their main topics because they see this is what their audience is interested in. So back to the original question, you're completely right that it's all about adding value to the audience and thinking like a publisher, thinking like as if you're putting out a magazine. And there it's really important. Many companies make a mistake in this, that they try to be overly salesy. They always think they have to write about themselves and write how awesome they are. It really is not about how awesome you are. It's about what value you can add to your audience.
Yeah, exactly. And this is, I mean, are there for this, let's say for this client, this is something where they wanted to have more accuracy in their candidates, right, that they're presenting for clients. But I'm sure you could also use the same principles to show your customers, so the companies, for example, that you recruit for, or in any other case, sort of you're selling to or whatever, that you're a good fit because you're aligned to what they believe in as well, right?
Absolutely. It's like, and this is where the, where in kind of like an interesting fun analogy comes in. Yep. You know, I'm sure you've seen these cartoons where a guy kind of talks to a girl and it kind of explains different customer acquisition methods through the analogy of a man talking to a woman trying to convince her to go to bed with him. And yep. in there's this cartoon where there's a guy talks to the girl and underneath it says sales. And he says, I'm a great lover. Let's make love. This is like the old way of saying, okay, this is sales, you know, a hard sale.
Yeah.
And then there's the alternative version of this is PR, where the woman talks to the, a woman talks to the original woman and says, well, trust me, this guy is a great lover. So that is PR.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
If you say with the analogy. And then when the guy talks to the woman and says, I'm a great lover, that is advertising. Right? So that's just another repeat the message. And then what is content marketing? Content marketing is the following. The guy talks to the woman and says, so in lovemaking, I think you have to take care of your partner and really listen to the cues that she gives you. You really delicately balance the fine line between giving and taking, between passion and tenderness, between adventure and safety. In his Art of Love, the Roman poet Ovid says, blah, 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 blah. And this way, where you are showing that you know something about lovemaking, the woman in this cartoon starts to think, oh my God, he really knows about this stuff. He must be a great lover. So you don't overly, and that is content marketing, right? Mm. So by you just showing your expertise in a certain topic and by you describing your philosophy, you are awakening the thought in your prospect's mind that this would be a perfect company to work with. Yes, they align with my philosophy. And that is, it takes longer than the overt sales method or just advertising, because with sales and advertising, you are just polarizing your audience. You say, okay, 97% of you don't want to buy. And so I'm talking to the 3% of you who will buy now, who really have an urgent need now.
Yeah.
Content marketing is great because it does address these 97% who don't have an immediate need now, but simply wants to have an option to at some point later work with you. So with them, you anchor in their mind that by you talking intelligently about your subject, for example, let's go back to the topic of recruiting.
Sure.
Are able to talk intelligently about recruiting and about how to find good personality fit in the recruiting area. Then you are able to anchor in your prospect's mind, hey, these people know what they're talking about, right? So they have expertise and I trust them. The way they talk, the way they present themselves, their philosophy really aligns with mine and I like them. You start to develop a liking relationship, which is really key for future and especially long-term business. So in summary, content marketing is not the fastest way to get your customers, but it is one of the most durable ways and it shows that you're in it for the long run. So that's why it's really good and useful and companies who do it and who do it successfully really do very well with it. And then it becomes, and then, sorry, last point, and then it becomes really cheap as a customer acquisition method, because you have a bank of content, people can just browse through it, and you don't spend almost anything to get the new customer in, right?
Yeah. And I guess one of the you know, some of the standard ways of doing this, I guess we started seeing, as you said, in the last 20 years, and especially now, I think since the late aughts, the emergence of blogs on websites, which are purely content driven. Even you have guest bloggers, especially for these marketplaces such as Airbnb is using this frivolously, where they'll have hosts writing blog posts to attract other hosts, obviously, and also customers, and they have customer sort of letters. I'm using an arbitrary example with Airbnb, but you see this all over the industry, and especially for marketplaces, because they have this inherent trait where the customer acquisition cost is almost always higher than the lifetime value of a customer. So it's really, I think that's why you're seeing it emerge so much in those type of businesses. Is this something you see with your own clients? Are you working with marketplaces, or is it more generalized so that it's almost for everyone at this point?
We don't work with marketplaces very much, because they're usually B2C, and we haven't had a client in B2B marketplaces yet, but we generally specialize in B2B, right? So I'm thinking back, most of the clients, if not all of them, we've had were in B2B. And it's a little bit of a different relationship with the customer there. So I cannot really comment on marketplaces very much, but generally you are absolutely right in that this is a method that is being more and more used because people simply acknowledge that the kind of like this old way of hammering people with advertising messages is getting less and less effective. There's more and more competition everywhere. And while it's still useful and it's still valuable, but the recognition is that you will only, with the advertising, you will usually capture mostly or only those who are right now in the mindset of buying, because there's always so many alternatives. So once they come, you want to get your customers to a point where when the urgent need arises to use your services or your product, that you come to mind first as a trusted resource, as somebody they can trust to be working with. That is the goal, and that is what content marketing will help you do. And that, you correct to say, has been really emergent more and more over the last, basically since the mid, noughties?
Aughts. or noughties. either one. I guess, as you're saying, it's also sort of a long run thing where you don't see an immediate return, because it's actually pretty sly in that way, I would say, and it's a pretty good sales trick actually to do content marketing, because you're pouring out a lot of content, and it's sort of a high time cost in the beginning, but you're sort of winning people over without them knowing that they're being sold to, because you're not advertising and telling them to buy, you're just sharing why you're better in a story.
Absolutely. So there's this myth that content marketing takes a huge time to show results. And it is true if you only, for example, go very traditional and only publish blog posts and just mention those blog posts on social media. Yeah, then it can really take quite a long time. But there's things you can do to accelerate this. We've written a blog post about this. I forget the company's name. It's been quite a while that I wrote the blog post, but it's a company in the US who started publishing white papers and then heavily advertised those white papers. It was downloadable PDFs. Yeah. And this has resulted in a very good ROI instantly in like the first 3 months. So they just advertised those PDFs with, hey, download our ebook. I think it was for something like an accountancy, like a really boring product.
Yeah, sure.
They advertise their PDFs heavily with display ads, and they then got a lot of downloaders, and then they sold to those downloaders via an email drip, and then got a lot of customers out of that. So that's one way you can accelerate that. And another way, which comes directly from us, from our own experience at Content 360, what I did around the new year in January, I published quite a few videos on LinkedIn. If you go to my profile, you can see them. And one of those videos was it's called like the 7 key principles of content marketing for 2019. And one of my contacts on LinkedIn saw it, really liked it, and he's a CEO of a company. And yeah. he showed it to his chief marketing officer, yeah. who then got in touch. We had a call, and in 8 days, I had a £20,000 deal in the bag, right? So it can happen really, really quickly. And as you correctly said, it can be a way of selling to people without them knowing that they're being sold to. Because this CEO saw that video, thought, oh, that's really interesting. I really like what he's saying here. Let me forward this to my marketing director. Yeah. And boom, and we had a call in like, in whatever 2 days.
Yeah, and so they saw value. I mean, they saw value. That's the crux of the entire concept of content marketing, is that you're giving value away. Exactly. And then you're sort of having fingers crossed that people will recognize your expertise and want more, so they'll reach out.
Exactly. And this giving value, Exactly. And this giving value away is something that is really misunderstood, because many people think that, especially when they're B2B in areas that are expertise heavy, people believe that, oh, this is my expertise and I'm charging for this. Mm. But that's a little bit of an old school way of thinking. Yeah. I believe personally you should be giving as much away as you can, as much away of knowledge and expertise on a one-to-many level. Of course, if somebody wants one-on-one time, then you charge for it, of course. But people always want to, not always, but like quite a few people who haven't fully grasped the concept of marketing yet say, well, I'm not going to be giving away from a lawyer, I'm not going to be giving away how to fill out this particular form because I make money with that. No. If you show people how to fill out that form,
yeah,
you are really showing great value, and people will still then come to you because they will have issues with it. They will have individual problem cases that you haven't shown in the video, but you have already given them a lot of value and thus built trust with them.
Absolutely. And I think we're hitting on something very important here, because what people also would probably fail to recognize sometimes is that, okay, let's give the lawyer scenario that you just described, is when, okay, say you're, giving away how to do a tax return or something, if you're in the US. And that might be something that you would normally charge maybe $150 for doing, just like a very simple tax return. I don't know any other prices, so I might be completely wrong. But you might give away that, and then, maybe 100 people will download the guide or, whatever. So you're thinking, oh, I just gave away $15,000 of my time. No. Now you might get a lawsuit given to you by 10 of those 100 people or 5 of those 100 people, and that might be $50,000 each. So you're actually gaining, $485,000, not giving away 15, because those are clients you wouldn't have otherwise, because they wouldn't know your expertise and how good you were if you didn't give away something to sort of entice them, I guess you could say.
Exactly. And I also think it's kind of, in this way, it's a little bit, content marketing is good for the soul, because you are the first one who gives value, right? So it's like you do good to the world, you spread goodness to the world, and then good things will come back to you. So I think
it's karma.
it's a great way to live. Exactly. You give karma. Correct.
Yeah, that's very it's very interesting, and I mean, it is actually beneficial for everyone. So it's not to get political or anything, but it really does add value across the line, which is counterintuitive, I guess, to some extent, where you'd be giving something away for free, and then that adds value across the line. But it does really help the customers, because they're gaining knowledge. Instead of just having this, this guy shouting, I'm a good lover, as an advertiser, but actually giving away knowledge again, we're returning to the concept of value here. And then you have customers coming back. So it's advertising that actually gives you something, and then it gives you back, obviously, because there's a return. But I'd be interested to hear about what's sort of your background? How did you come to work with this? And is this something you planned on doing? Did you, after your education, or is it something else that just sort of spurred out of thin air?
No, it actually came from one very specific experience that I had, which is my last job where I was employed was in the summer of 2016, and that was a company that a German startup that I helped to expand to the UK, and I was the managing director for the UK for them, and everything that they wanted, and I was, there was the first job, first and last job that I was fired from. It hasn't happened to me before, but we simply didn't see eye to eye, and it's going to become pretty apparent soon why. They wanted me to essentially just be a salesperson and to just go door to door and to tell people about the product and to, yeah, just sell one-on-one. And I thought that is incredibly inefficient because there was just so many. I mean, it did work up to an extent.
Sure.
The really interesting thing is that going door to door, even in a B2B scenario, has resulted in some sales, which is quite interesting. But by not doing any marketing, we were shooting ourselves in the foot. And they did not give me, despite what they initially announced, I then was not given a marketing budget to work with. So everything I was essentially supposed to do was to go from office to office and just talk to, and it was a product that was addressing office managers and support staff. So I was just going into offices, telling people, hey, I have this product for office managers. Can I talk to your office manager? And they like looked at me, okay.
You have an
appointment? Right. I said, no, I'm just here to talk to them. And it's like, well, this is not how it works. So it worked quite well in Berlin. It didn't work as well in London. But the key point was, I was telling the CEO, hey, this is a product that is really well suited for content marketing. Because our audience, office managers, are generally quite like neglected by the marketplace. Yep. Like they're not a very desirable target audience. People don't create many blogs for them and so on. So if we could create a good content series of something that you know, addresses office managers' pain points, you know, like a magazine of how to make an office nice, how to be more efficient, time management, and so on, that would be a great winner. We could really build a community there. And then on the back of it, sell a lot of product with this.
Yep.
And they were just very short-term thinking. And because I kept banging on about like building something long-term and building a community, they then fired me. And in retrospect, it was a great thing that it happened because it spurred me to thinking, people just don't get this content marketing thing. And I just love the concept. I love content marketing as a concept because of the karma element of it, as you correctly put it. I'm actually going to use that term more. Good. Because now
that's
thinking,
my let's, content marketing to you.
Great, exactly. You got it. That's perfect. So, and this really inspired me to help companies and start working with them to help them to improve that. Because more than anything, it's a mindset thing. People need to change their mindsets from this, I charge for this expertise and I don't really know what I should be talking about. Help people get there. Help people to get to a point where content marketing becomes second nature to them. And that's where content marketing was born from. Sorry, that's where Content 360 was born from. That's what I meant.
That's great. And that's what you've been doing now for the past 2.5 years, I guess?
2.5 years, exactly. I was fired on the 18th September 2016, and right on 1st of October, I started Content 360. So I was like, it was an inspiring move.
Yeah, very nice. And how did you find it starting out? Because obviously, starting a new company, that's a whole new brand. And I'm guessing, I mean, obviously, you just told me the story. You do content marketing for your own brand through LinkedIn. But how did you find it in the beginning? I mean, it's starting to become a pretty crowded place with all these content agencies, writing agencies, marketing agencies. What made you stand out of the crowd in the beginning? How long did it take you to start making a living off it?
Oh, well, that wasn't a problem because I'm quite well connected in the London startup community. So I told a few people that I'm doing this, and I got a few gigs right away. And I can talk about that later. But so that was not a problem to get the first few gigs. Yeah, sometimes it was a little bit tough when you think, oh, crap, I don't really have a fully, you know, polished brand and so on. So that's not, I'm not there yet. And also still at this point, it's only me and freelancers that I work with. So I don't, for example, yet have fixed employees, but it's going to come. And, sure. You know, it's just something that you just work on and you grow and you sharpen your proposition. I don't necessarily think that you need to focus a huge amount on how can you stand out from the crowd. I think if you just focus on delivering great service and really understanding your customers and their pain points,
yeah,
it's going to happen naturally. I think people are too obsessed with competition.
Yeah.
And especially when it's a service business, it's like if you are, there's this wonderful speech from Neil Gaiman about make good art. And it's a great, great video. I really recommend everybody to watch it. And he's a writer, and he recommends that when you are in a service business where you, for example, you write for people, there's three factors that you need to, and if you fulfill two of them, if you deliver on time, if you deliver quality, and you're a nice person to work with, you will never go hungry. And he says, and you only have to hit two of those three. So if you deliver on time and you deliver good quality, you'll be fine. Similarly, if you deliver quality and you are a nice person to work with, but you don't deliver on time, you still are going to be doing fine. So whoever wants to start a service business, you only have to tick two of those three boxes. You know, deliver on time, deliver quality, and be a nice person to work with, you'll be fine. So I think, honestly, if you just focus on that and focus on delivering value to your clients, you will be fine.
Yeah. And you know, that's your core tenets, basically, for what you're doing.
Yes. I mean, for me, it's all about solving the customer's problem, right? There, for example, this recruiting agency that I worked with recently, they simply had the problem. They simply did not know where to start. And so what I did with them, I created a roadmap, something that when they are confused, when they don't know what's next, they go into the roadmap and they locate themselves on the roadmap. Where are we now? And then I say, all right, if you're at this point, do this, right? Because very often it's this kind of this leadership and certainty that they are lacking because they don't know what's next, right? And so what we've done with them is to create this dedicated roadmap for them. And they also can, of course, always get in touch. It's part of the deal that they can always get in touch with me and ask, hey, we have a problem here. What would you recommend? Right. So there's always that. So, yeah, solving the customer's problems is everything.
And actually, that brings up another, you know, interesting point is where do you actually begin if you want to do content marketing in your company? Or, you know, how do you start?
You start with setting up the correct infrastructure so that you say, okay, let's start with something. Let's say we want to publish a regular blog, let's say weekly basis. And we've decided because our audience is B2B and most likely they will be on LinkedIn and not on Instagram. So we will publish a weekly blog post and we'll talk about it in a short video that we will publish on LinkedIn. That's it. You don't need to do a great deal more. You will then... The one thing that you also then need to establish, I forgot to mention that, it's not only the blog, but also some way of collecting email addresses and then create a mechanism of, you know, of emailing people who subscribe to your newsletter.
Yeah.
That's that. And then to have what I also recommend is to have a download page for some kind of downloadable asset that could be like a PDF or it could be like a special training video. That is really useful because very often people just don't really use subscribe to our newsletter boxes anymore. Right? It's much more likely that you will get people's email addresses when you actually give them something valuable to download. For example, like a PDF or like a training video or something like that. So for the high value content, you can ask people email for their email addresses, and that's how you build your audience. So those are the basic building blocks for a small B2B company that are not overwhelming to set up. So set up a good blog, have a way of putting, I very much recommend videos. Video is like 10 times as impactful than normal text. So I would say have a very simple way of recording yourself talking about a topic, about something that you publish on the blog, And that's that. And then have a way of collecting people's email addresses, probably through a download page or something, and an email marketing tool that can automate some of that, right? So when somebody subscribed, they get a hello message and so on.
Yeah.
And that is, we provide the exact steps, do this, do this, do this, on our, in our training course. One of those things that I've provided to the recruitment agency. And so they were a great client, because it helped us sharpen our value proposition with regards to something that approaches a product. So it's essentially going to be a training course where somebody who wants to start out, they can just, you know, use this as a roadmap. So we will, at some point, we'll be starting to sell that as a product and not just as a service, which will, of course, help us scale. So that's how you start. You put these infrastructure points into place, and then you need to have a mechanism of how you regularly feed the beast, because one of the important things about content marketing is that you publish regularly. And it's definitely something I need to improve on myself, because I don't publish regularly, and I need to improve that. But a company who kind of is really committed to this needs to do that.
Yeah. That's one of the issues I'm having as well, is just being regular, being diligent with posting. I mean, it's one of the things you just forget, and it sort of slides out the window, and you're like, oops, didn't happen.
Absolutely.
I think it's interesting, you're talking about the infrastructure points, because obviously you start thinking right away that about this very, I think it's a rather new trend now, where so many companies or small, you know, consultancies, stuff like this, they do free webinars. And then at the end of it, then you sign up for something or you get sold something. Mm-hmm. Or you'll have these people who they give you a free ebook, and then you give them your email to download it, and then you get a bunch of emails, and now you're being sold something, right? Or you have, as you said, where you download like a PDF thing, or you get access to some sort of leads list or prospect list. I see these flourishing around LinkedIn so much these days, hundreds of thousands of likes and comments on them. So, I mean, it must be working, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely working. It's just because so many people are doing it, you really need to focus on quality. There's just a lot of crap out there.
Yeah,
if you genuinely provide quality and you really put in an effort and you just don't try to pull wool over people's eyes, you will do fine. It's there's a tendency towards cutting corners with content and providing stuff that is just, you know, very anodyne, very, very bland and very basic. And that's why I prefer working with small companies, because they still can maintain a certain uniqueness of tone of voice. Like whenever you look at corporate, like big corporate companies who are only starting with content marketing, it very rarely works well, because there's just this blandness of, you know, decision making by committee, and oh no, we cannot say that because the person in department XYZ needs to sign off on it and so on, and it's just a nightmare. So that's why I think small companies really have an advantage here. If they have this mindset of genuinely wanting to help and educate their audience, and they have still the ability to inject some character to it. Like even if it's a CMO, but the personality of the person presenting is so important. If you can come across reasonably well on video, or you have like a unique point of view on something and can be a little bit controversial, I think that can go such a long way, because there is a giant load of bland crap out there. So if you can stand out in this way, it's gold.
Yeah, and I guess that's, as you say correctly say, it's one of the great strengths that you know, startups or small you know, SMEs, they have, is that they can be more agile. There's not a set bureaucracy of, as you say, you know, a decision by committee, all this stuff, where they can be very, they can adapt very quickly, and they can, you know, almost turn on the penny. And that gives them, that actually makes them stand out rather than, you know, be part of this gray blob that everyone else is part of.
Yes, that's true. But also with the smallness comes a limitation in time and budgets. So it's never perfect. But if you can manage that, and this is what our work with, this is what I try to provide to my clients, is that this friction that comes naturally with it, that like, okay, shit, what are we going to be writing about next week? and oh damn, I didn't have time to record a video this week or something like that, that we like eliminate all those friction points. That, for example, one company that we work with, what they do is they just dump a topic on us, and we, because we've worked with them for quite a long time,
yeah,
we already know their preferred tone of voice. So we just take that and we publish it in their name, mm-hmm, and are, you know, we're removing all the friction points from their processes so that they can really deliver on a regular basis, and yeah, we don't have the unpleasantness of, oh damn, this week we weren't able to do it because XYZ. So it's never perfect. You know, if you're too big of a company, it gets too bland, but you have the resources. If you're a small company, you don't have the resources. You can be a little bit edgy and unique, but then yeah, you very often, you know, say, oh damn, this week we didn't have time because I had to go to this conference and so on. So it's never perfect, but this is what we are trying to help those small companies do, that yeah, these friction points get removed.
You're trying to make a bridging between, you know, sort of the strengths of the small companies and the assets of the big companies, in essence.
Exactly. You put it very well.
Okay. That's cool. I mean, I'm learning a lot just from talking to you right now. And I guess this is a good promo for Content 360 as well. So what I want to hear. So what does the rest of the year look like for you? You have this project now with the recruitment company, I know. So, yeah, and I'm here that you're aiming to, you know, get some regular people on the team. What else? What's happening in the, I mean, is there any changes coming up in the way that we do it? Are there new platforms emerging? I know also, and actually touching on what we were saying before about all these webinars and stuff like this, podcast does really seem to be the next step, you know, after the webinars where you do podcasts, and that's now the content marketing platform. And I mean, that's one of the things we're using podcasts for in the Hold Founders Lab, is to give value to, you know, aspiring entrepreneurs and startups in the ecosystem in the ecosystems around the world where we have listeners, by sharing content such as what we're doing now, where people will have some value addition. Do you have any thoughts on this?
Well, you know what? I'm not a huge fan of thinking about, like, what's the next thing? What's the next platform? It really is about, you need to understand your individual, your unique audience, who you want to target. So if you're a recruitment company, you really want to get to understand, and this is why we put a lot of emphasis in our trainings on talking to your prospective customers. You really need to understand them and build a great persona. And if then it turns out that you could capture them with podcasts, by all means, do it. But yeah, for example, one of our clients works in the HR space, mm-hmm, and although they now started doing a podcast, they did it on their own. They didn't do it with us.
Sure.
And I don't know what results they're having with that. But we realized early on that their audience, which are like senior HR directors, those people are really difficult to reach online with like online content. So what we did with this company is, because we understood their target audience, we wrote a book, like a physical paper book, and then we sent it to them as a gift.
Mm.
Super successful, had like somewhere, it's hard to fully pinpoint it, but somewhere between 500 and 1,000% ROI on this, meaning we invested 25 grand and we got some 300,000 in revenue out of that, which was extremely successful. Why? Because we did something that others don't do. We created a paper book, and with that, we captured the attention of them without going this traditional route of, oh, what is hot right now? Because the book was not hot. The books are not hot in any way. But if you really understand your target audience, you can deliver something to them that will get them to pay attention. So that's why I'm not a huge fan of thinking about, oh, yeah, let's do podcasts. No, first understand your audience. And if then you see that they would be a good candidate for a podcast, do a podcast. That's fine. I just know that only 25% of the UK, of anybody in the UK, for example, listens to podcasts. Yeah. Only 25%, right? So 75% of people don't even know what a podcast is. So if yeah, you believe, oh, this is the next hot thing. Is there?
Oh, yeah, I think I lost you for a second.
Yeah, sorry, I just got a phone call in. I don't know how to, you can cut this out, but it's weird that whenever a phone call comes in, I would like to be shown, I would like to be shown busy. Anyway, so I rewind and I'll say this again. So, where was I?
So knowing your audience, right?
Now I lost my thread, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So now if you really understand your audience, you will then maybe arrive at the conclusion that you should be doing a podcast. But because only 25% of the UK actually ever listens to a podcast, there was this stat I once read, in the last 3 months, 25% listened to at least one podcast once. So it's not a super popular medium. Like YouTube is way more popular. So that's why if you understand your audience and you understand their habits, how they consume your content, you will then be fine. But don't just jump on a platform because you think it's the next hot thing. I think that that would be a real mistake to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, just on the topic of that, I mean, I'm just looking here at just looking at our own metrics from the podcast could be an interesting thing as well. We actually have a third of the listeners are from the UK. It probably has something to do with the fact that we have a lot of students at the school and it's in the UK. And actually a quarter from Norway and about 15% from the US. We are not doing any direct communications to the US. And actually, surprisingly enough, about, you know, about another 10% is from Germany. And it's an English podcast. We only have, so it's interesting. I think it's along the lines of, I mean, it's probably boring for those listening at home, listening to me read up demographics, but I think it's an interesting fact just compared to what you were saying, where, you know, only a quarter of UK people listen to it, but then you sort of, you're picking up organically almost, you know, a few thousand listeners from Germany, just as a peripheral thing, and it has to be organic because I couldn't see any other logic behind it. So again, sort of this thing about knowing your audience and knowing where they roam and knowing how to get in touch with them seems to be quintessential. And I actually really like the story about the physical book because that's not something I would think about in a million years.
Yeah. May I ask, if that's okay, what is your goal with the podcast? What kind of audience are you trying to build?
Well, I think it's, and I actually read another stat, and it's about millennials and podcasts, where it's sort of the up and coming way we absorb information. That's the, you know, the surge of these audiobooks and all that stuff. For us, it's, it's a platform where it's really more sort of an open source platform that's not so rigid, easy to digest, sort of a conversational forum where, entrepreneurs can share their stories and where people who are thinking about starting a business or people who are running in a startup can learn some lessons and hear from, you know, from the mouth of the actual people who did it, hear what they learned and how they failed or what's been their successes and how they did it. So, you know, sort of flattening it out and making it a bit less, not putting it on a pedestal, but sort of making it in layman's terms, how other people have done things.
Okay, but and what is like an ideal profile? Is it like a student who wants to start a business and so on? Is that your target audience?
Majority, yes.
Okay, great. And you just for the time being, you don't want to sell anything to them. You just want to build an audience, inform them, and it's a bit of a, like a passion project. Is this correct?
Yes, I mean, I just love talking to entrepreneurs and hearing about their stories.
Exactly. So that is. And sorry that I turned the interview around a little bit and I asked you, but I think that's a great example of a, so you don't immediately pursue a commercial goal like a company would, right? So that you just try to build an audience and make something, a complex topic accessible to people, right? So that's a great way of initially building an audience. And then at some point, because you're not selling anything, you will grow that audience faster. Yeah, every single time you introduce a kind of like a commercial message, you dampen the growth, right? That's clear because just people don't like it very much. You know, when you then at the end tell them, and buy this, buy that. So that's fine. And you'll grow your audience
faster. I think it's interesting. And I get to learn so much as well. So it's actually the most value addition is for me, I think.
And that is the perfect attitude for content marketing. If only small companies could adopt that as well. Because if, for example, this recruitment firm, if they were to run an interview series with their target audience, for example, mm-hmm. with the recruiters that they, in the in-house recruiters, if they were to interview them, only because they themselves are curious, right? You want to know, so how is your life? What do you do on a daily basis? And so on. They would learn so much themselves. So what you told me is exactly the right attitude that companies who are selling something should adopt in order to be successful with content marketing. This type of curiosity and doing it for the passion of it and not necessarily thinking immediately about the return, it's a great way to do content marketing. This will take you, I mean, you with your podcast will not make any money anytime soon, right? But that is not your goal.
No.
You plan to just inform, educate yourself, and build the audience. That's great. If you wanted to, you could, however, start introducing commercial messages. That's fine as well. But everything that I just wanted to say here is that your strategy is one great way of building an audience and to deliver content that on the back of it later, you can commercialize. So really well done with this.
Well, thank you very much. And I think that's a great way to end this conversation because we're running out of time, I'm afraid. I'd love to be here for another 2 hours talking more. Mikhail, it's been really great to have you on and thank you so much. And where can people learn more about Content 360 and about you?
Yeah, so they should just go on content360.com, content with a K, and content360.com. There we show what we do and some case studies and blog posts and so on. And they can, of course, contact me directly at michael@content360.com, Michael without an E, M-I-C-H-A-L. And I'm fairly easily findable on the socials as well. Probably LinkedIn is the best way to reach out to me.
Okay, cool. I'll put all your information in the description as well, so people can find it there. Yet again, thank you very much for coming on, Mikhail. It's been a pleasure. This has been the HFL podcast, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks.